All right, Matthew, welcome to episode 54 of the Performance Advantage podcast, where we bring sports science to the people with myself, Dr. Will O'Connor, and Dr. Matt Miller, sport scientists. This week on the show, we're talking overtraining because I have cooked myself. Hard to admit, but I've done it. So we're going to break down my training and how I could have potentially avoided overtraining and what you can do to remedy your overtraining. Special shout out to our sponsors, SmartMTB Training and the Endurance Training Hub, online self-coaching software to help you become a better athlete. All right, Matthew, what have you been up to?
Well, made it out for some mountain biking finally, which is pretty good.
Oh, yeah, your trails open?
Our local park isn't open, but we're allowed to drive within our region, and there are some other trails. So we went there, did some trail work, did some riding, and man, it just felt so good to be back out on the trails.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'd see, because it sounds like Rotorua is like one of the only mountain bike places that was open during like super level 4 lockdown.
Yeah, ours were totally closed, and I think it's because it's like a 20-minute drive to get out to the trails, and you need to drive out this like long gravel, narrow road where people always drive off the bank. So you could imagine like everyone was kind of itching to get out for the last month, and then so many people down that road, I think it would have been a bit of a mess. So rightfully so, those trails were totally closed. So we weren't able to go, and we also weren't supposed to drive very far. The other trails are about a 30-ish minute drive away. But yeah, so things are starting to ease, and it was really nice to get out there. But of course, since no one was riding, the trails were like pretty overgrown and just stuff scattered everywhere. So, you know, I had to bust out the old Laotian machete and chop some things down and, you know, clear it out. And yeah, it was a really good time.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. I've seen a whole bunch of people out through the trails in Rotorua, just keeping them up to scratch, and some of them are looking mint. There's been a lot going on there. People have had a lot of time on their hands.
Yeah, and actually, it like, shows that how much work actually goes into the making the trails, because we walked some of the older trails. I was like, oh, yeah, we could make this rideable. And then I looked at my hands, and I thought about all the work that we'd done for the last, like, hour and a half, and you know, since I haven't been mountain biking, my hands have kind of softened up over the last month. So I just had blisters from swinging my machete. So it was actually a little bit embarrassing. I'm like, wow, my hands are so soft just slapping away at the keyboard and riding road bikes.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was really fun. And I tell you what, I really got into this weekend. Like, I was going to have time totally just away from my computer, not doing any work, but I found out how to make a t-shirt store, and I just pretty much got obsessed with making t-shirts and stuff like that. So you know, I made MTB PhD t-shirts, Smart MTB Training t-shirts, Break Ace t-shirts, Performance Advantage t-shirts, and you know, it's just dragging and dropping all these logos, but then you can add words and things like that. It got a bit out of control, but Now I have a merch store, and I've sold some t-shirts, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's right. And we are going to have the Performance Advantage podcast t-shirt and apparel line out ASAP, now that Matt has so much time on his hands and wants to procrastinate from his actual work to create a Performance Advantage podcast merch store. So
we already
got that up and running. We'll flick it out.
Yeah,
I think you made them already.
Yeah, made them. You know, because we always talk some of the things that we talk about. You know, like train easy, race fast. You know, that would look super cool if we had a t-shirt that said that with the podcast logo. So that one's on the list.
Yeah,
just so many options.
Keep an eye out. Keep an eye out. Especially if you're getting a stimulus check, throw that our way.
Well, the thing is, like, we don't make hardly anything on the t-shirts. Like, even if I sold 100, it would hardly be worth the couple of days that I spent making them. But it's just, like, really, it's just fun. Like, as a kid, I always wanted to make t-shirts. You know, not like those, you know, the sarcastic sayings t-shirts, you know, people love those, especially in the States. I didn't really want to make those, but I just always thought, like, yeah, I could make a cool t-shirt. Yeah.
Well, now you're that guy.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Living the dream. Well, man, I don't think things have been as smooth sailing for me.
No?
No, Matt. Matt, this is hard. This is hard for me to admit, but I'm overtrained.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah, so that really leads us into my story of being overtrained and the topic for this week's podcast.
You know, like, we see this a lot.
Oh, man. Every athlete.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
It's super common. It's so, the way we're approaching this topic is, I knew that you had some sort of overtraining, and actually at this point, that's pretty much all I know. I don't know how it happened. I don't know how you're feeling. I don't know how your performance is. So I think it'd be pretty cool if, you know, since this is something that we see all the time, I think we kind of approach this podcast as, you know, we're working with an athlete trying to understand what's happening. So I'm going to try and understand what's happening with you, even though I don't know anything about running. I mean, I do. I have to tell you, I ran 5Ks the other day, so I felt really good. But other than that, you know, that's about the extent of it, which we talked about before. But yeah, well, I think, you know, why don't you take me back to the beginning and what happened?
All right. Well, you know, this is not my first foray into overtraining. But yeah, if we go back, all right, coming into lockdown, that was about 6 weeks ago now. Anyway, I got back into training from the Tarawera Ultra, which went amazingly. That was all good. Had 2 weeks fully off, got back into training. Pretty standard increase in training load, and by the time we got to lockdown, I was like full training back into it, and thought now's a good time to test myself, like in terms of what I think I could maintain as a training load, how I could push myself without the distractions of the, you know, everything, like everything's closed, like we're literally just stuck inside unless you're exercising. So that's cool. So yeah, did 2 weeks of big training. So it was pretty much 140 kilometers of running, with two hard workouts and two easy rides. And at the end of that 2 weeks, as I mentioned, like a couple episodes ago, my wife was like, you're too tired. Like, that's too much training. You need to pull it back. And I was having, and then I had a recovery week after those 2 weeks, and I was like, damn it, yeah, I can't handle that. Like, that is too much training. So I had a recovery week. I rode three times that week. One of them was way too hard on Zwift. on the Monday after, like, the end of that 2 week training block. But I ran 70 kilometers, so pretty much 50% running load. No hard workout. I know one. I did my 10K time trial. So that was a 30-minute hard effort and two hard bike rides of an hour. But overall, like, my TSS training stress score, like, it was down, it was low. And then I thought, I'm recovered. I'll get back into it at a reduced load. So it's like, I can't handle like the 140K, and my TSS was around 800. I need to bring it back. So I did that. I didn't do any hard runs. I took a full day off running, but I did introduce a hard bike on Zwift. I was like, I'll pull back on the intensity. I don't really need it in running at the moment. Nothing specifically coming up. Having fun on Zwift. I'll do a Zwift race and two easy rides. And then that was like, I was like, yeah, cool. Ran 120 Ks. So I pretty much replaced that extra sort of 20 kilometers, hour and a half to 2 hour run with an extra bike. And that was, yeah, I was feeling like a bit tired, but otherwise like pretty standard. And then coming into the week we've just had, I was like, yep, just replicated again. The goal was to do that for 3 weeks. And Monday didn't run. All good. Easy ride. That was all good. And then we get into Tuesday, tired run, pretty average. Starting to be pretty tired. We tried to record the podcast. It was like,
You just weren't into it. I could
I
tell
wasn't
something
like,
was off.
yeah.
I was like,
You said that, yeah.
I was like, who's this guy that I'm talking to? Because you were not, it's like, and you like, so everyone has bad days or whatever, but I could see like, because I'm looking at you when I'm talking, and then we're talking about a topic, and I'm like, Will just doesn't seem very engaged. And then we'd got like halfway through recording the podcast. You're like, I'm not sure if this is good. I was like, are you serious? Because it takes a lot of, you need to be really focused when you're recording the podcast. So I was fully focused this whole time. And then I suddenly see that you're not committed. So we just bagged it. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Will's a bit off. You just had all the telltale signs, right? Like you normally we talk on the phone quite a lot, just throughout the week, just seeing what's up. Didn't hear much from Will. Didn't get many texts. I'm like, oh, man, something's off with this guy. And like, I gotta be honest, I saw it coming.
Oh,
I saw it coming a mile away.
man, you sound like my wife.
I'm not. I'm just your friend.
Okay, well let me finish my story. Let me
Okay,
finish my
I'll
story.
tell you why I saw it coming.
Now or
No,
after?
finish it.
Yeah. Okay, so then we're like that was a sign. Then Wednesday, but then also not unusual. Anyway, Wednesday had 2 hour run and I ended up I was just like so not into it in the morning, so I split it. I was like, I'll do a double, it's all good. And then I was like, yeah, that's all good. Next day, up early, out for a run, and I was like, man, I'm not f I'm this is I think I'm getting a bit cooked here, and I'll try a 5K tempo just to make things exciting, see where I'm at as a bit of a test. And I tried to pick it up for a 5K and didn't really look at my splits, just pushed along. And I did just over 20 minutes. And a 20, like just the week before, I'd averaged 4 minute Ks for 20 Ks at a heart rate of like lower zone two, Matt, not even upper zone two. And now I felt like I was running tempo, slower than that. And to me, that was just like, I'm done. That's the nail in the coffin that showed me how cooked I was. So I was like, maybe now I don't know how deep I am into this. And I had a couple of days off Sunday morning. So I had Friday, Saturday off, like nothing. Sunday morning up, I'll try an easy ride. Got on the bike, started pedaling, and I was like, yep, I'm cooked. This is I'm done. And so now that's kind of my story of how it progressed over the last sort of 5 weeks. And now we can kind of get into the warning signs I missed, the warning signs I have caught, and Matt's kind of observations. And what are they, Matt? You saw it coming?
Yeah. I instantly knew something was going to happen when you started talking about how excited you were about Zwift racing.
Oh, man.
Because,
yep.
So one of the things that I've noticed about you, because you spend most of your time running these days, and usually when you are thinking about a ride, it's usually an easy ride. And you're pretty good at always riding pretty easy. Like, we've ridden together and we always go really easy. But I think sometimes runners forget that when you go hard on the bike, it's actually hard. Because, like, if you go hard when you're running, like, you can really feel it. And when you go really hard on the bike, like, you feel it while you're doing it. And then afterwards, you kind of don't feel anything. Like, you're not really that sore. But there was a lot of metabolic stress when you're digging deep and going hard on the bike. And since you haven't done as much riding lately, and you're definitely focused on running, I was just kind of thinking, I was like, man, Zwift racing is hard. And you were talking about how you absolutely buried yourself. I was like, well, if you absolutely buried yourself when you're running, you wouldn't be able to run for like 3 days, right? But if you absolutely bury yourself on Zwift, you can do whatever you want the next day because you probably feel fine, but you still absolutely buried yourself. And it's kind of a trap that we all get into, because once we start going hard and maybe we don't feel super tired at the start, it's easy to just keep on going. So if we get into a block where there's a lot of racing, maybe 3 races in a row or something like that, we can probably continue training throughout those. But then it's after that, when things start to spiral out of control, if we keep up our normal training load without getting in recovery. So as soon as you kind of said how much you loved Zwift racing, I was like, oh boy. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you're right. I did like completely underestimate and ignore the demands of cycling. Like, as a runner, I kind of just considered cycling not training. and honestly, I was like, oh yeah, don't like. And in the past, when I was mountain biking an hour, like literally just heading out to do a blat on the trail, I don't think my heart rate got above 120. That is really easy. Like, that's just, but then getting into Zwift and even not racing, you're like, oh yeah, well, I want to average 200 watts, or you can see your heart rate. Like, you can see all your data on screen the whole time. You're like, oh, muzzle. Oh, I didn't realize I was going that easy. I'll go a bit harder. And still though, not really considering it a contribution to my fitness or like as training stress, like in terms of running. So that I could have definitely incorporated more, like in terms of my overall plan of how much available energy or training stress I have. And then, like, so that's something I would have caught in an athlete immediately. You know, like, if I was looking at, I actually have an athlete, and she did a 5K time trial and was a bit off, but not crazy. Like, I don't know, 5 to 10 seconds per kilometer off where she was. And then I was like, oh yeah, but you did this and you did this, which you don't consider training, but because her job's quite physical. I was like, and that they just got back to work, you know, that's a big difference. And but then for me, yeah, I didn't those introductions of stress, which you wouldn't consider your norm and you might not consider training, are definitely ones that can derail you, right?
Yeah, well, don't forget about your other stresses that you've had. So there's also this other one that's been going on for you. So there's two that have been going on for you for a while. And the first one is you've been going harder when you go mountain biking, because I've been seeing your Strava and you've been pushing it on the climbs a little bit, trying to get some PRs. Am I right?
I don't know if I'd say that. Mountain biking.
So, nah. What you've been saying to me is that you have about 1 hour to go ride in the morning. So you just usually, you know, go for a blat on the trails. And if you're riding for 1 hour on the trails, like, it takes you 20 minutes to get there, pretty much. So if you want to get some trails, like, under your belt, you actually have to kind of go pretty hard, right? To get to the trails, get some trails done, and get home within an hour.
It depends where I go, actually, because if I take the sneaky route, it's about 15 minutes. Okay. But anyway, Matt, I see what you're saying.
Okay, so there's one. And the other one is you haven't been really sleeping that well. Because
that's a big one.
Jimothy has been waking you up pretty early. Like, really early, like 3 a.m. And then at 3 a.m., that's when you're doing your kicker or your Zwift races. Something like that. So you're also, your sleep cycle has changed. And a lot of times, I've seen those a lot of times go hand in hand, like this overtraining thing and sleep cycles. So it's sometimes hard to say what comes first and if nothing else changes in their life. But for you, it's that you had to get up, right? So you had to sleep a little bit differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was that, you know, Emma said that to me as well. She's like, are you sure this is the right time to be really pushing yourself? You know, which it's not. Like, with my son now being almost 5 months old. And also, like, we have the ongoing stress of running our businesses in a global pandemic, which is...
It's not easy.
It's stressful in itself, as everyone on the other end of this can fully equate to. And that's why we really want to break this down and just to show how I'm overlooking things, which is hard for me to admit. Like, this is supposed to be my job. I'm supposed to be good at this. But, I've stuffed it up.
Yeah, but this is, I don't think athletes can, I don't think coaches can coach themselves.
People, why don't you have a coach? And a part of it is I love this process. Like, as much as I'm annoyed that I'm having to have a break and I'm in this position, I've also been able to really delve into the every step along the way that has led me here and how that I can apply that to, one, the athlete mindset, and also the warning signs I may have missed as a coach in an athlete, or how I can explain them. And I find that incredibly valuable. Like, so when someone says, I did that, like, yep, I did that. And then did you do this? Yes. And then did you not consider how hard you were going on your mountain bike rides? Ah, yeah, I guess I did. But I wanted to, you know, so... All of these things I find extremely valuable in self-experimenting.
Yeah, that's totally, like, part of what we do in coaching is science. And then the other part is drawing from anecdotes. And they make a lot of sense, actually, if you can put them together, the science and the anecdotes. And especially if it's something that you've experienced before, because you know how it feels. I think... When you can put those three things together, you can really get a good understanding of where someone's coming at and what needs to be done next. But that doesn't mean you can do it very well for yourself.
No, and this is, for a long time, I have, because of my past history and overtraining, in which I went off to become a quote-unquote professional triathlete in 2013, I think it was, or 12. Lived in Australia, trained with some pro guys there, tried to complete their training load, and dug myself into such a deep hole it took me essentially 2 years to come back. So that was, you know, 2016 by the time I was back. And from there, I was very conservative about how I built my training and, you know, rest. Okay, I'm tired, rest. And really, over this last year, 12 months, and especially this year, I wanted to push myself to like a next level, to the new limits. And part of that, like, as we often, I think, see with athletes, Matt, they have the idea of what they think they can complete in training. And this is even part of, like, my 6-step process, is the critical evaluation. Have you ever done this training load? can you do it consistently for a very long time before progressing to the next step up? And this is also what's reminded me of when I am looking at an athlete. Am I rushing the athlete too fast into something? Am I trying to push their training load too high? Because you, as a coach, you have the juggling act of keeping the athlete motivated to train and wanting to, you know, have them feel like they're training while also trying to pull them back. Because sometimes you can see, like, actually, you can only do 3 days a week. I know you really, like, you love exercising, you love doing 5 days a week, but at this stage you can't handle it. It's trying to juggle that. And with me, that was, and this is part of the process, part of what I wanted to test. Could I handle this level of training? I have fallen trapped to, no, I can't. So something needs to change. And I didn't change a lot. And now I'm in the position where if I'd done 20%, 30% less, I could have done it this entire 5 weeks. Instead, I've had 3 good weeks of training, 1 recovery week, and now I'm going to have a week or two completely off training. Like, which is just, that is not what we want.
I pretty much would guarantee what you'll find is that, you know, you have to, even if you had 2 weeks totally off, you'll get back into training. And this is exactly what happens. You come back to training and you feel like absolute garbage. So sometimes the first workout back is great. Then you feel bad for the rest of it. And during that time is when it feels like you totally blew it for, like, now if we're talking, we blew it for the last month, 3 or 4 weeks after we realized we needed a break. What happens after that 10 days back into it is you start to feel pretty much exactly where you were before. So it's you know this, and like I see it all the time. Like I feel it myself. I talked about this after I went on the family trip earlier in the year. I came back and I felt like absolute garbage for a couple of weeks, and then I was exactly back to where I was.
Well, Matt, and this part of it is my experience in overtraining coming to the fore, where now, could I have caught it earlier is one thing. And it's hard as a endurance athlete. And maybe if I sort of conversed with Emma, who we agreed, and with you, are going to now, I'm going to present my training, more, and, you know, and the pre sense rather than the post. Like, how do you think this was? How do you think this is going to go? Anyway, completing it, and then, like, within training, you get tired. And then I was doing some tests. Like, I did the 10K time trial. It went pretty much as planned. Okay, so there's nothing drastic there about my reduction. Then after that week off, getting back into it, my zone 2 run was like incredible. So everything was tracking well. And this can also be a trap where, like part of it was everything was going well. I was actually feeling amazing. Like, I was feeling so strong in that week. So essentially what I did is 2 big weeks, like really big, easy week with a time trial, then getting back into training, feeling great. And then into that weekend, starting to feel a bit tired. So really this paints a good picture for maybe how I'll be able to structure things leading into a race. But yeah, feeling amazing. And then what I needed from there, so starting to get tired, but being in a good position. So now you're like, well, obviously I'm just tired from training. This is all good. And then it was like Tuesday, falling off a cliff. So having that easy week, coming back into another week of training, just hitting these targets, feeling amazing, feeling so strong, getting tired in the weekend, Monday, yep, it's off running. That's going to bring me back. Tuesday, and it was like, boom, I was gone. And that can then looked back at my warning signs, craving sugar, tired, people commenting I was tired, losing motivation, pushing my volume. All these warning signs I know. And then I also know now to rest completely, because in the past, what I've done, Matt, as you have done, is I'm so afraid to get fat and unfit. Like we are, right? Like this, and undoing everything I've worked so hard for, in these previous weeks and months and years, which is going to, you know, could be completely lost, 100% of it. I'm going to be a sedentary, couch-bound individual if I have these next few days off. So what I'll do is I'll do a little bit of training, or I'll just do easy training, right? And I've fallen into that trap, and that is what never allows you to fully recover and can get you from potentially where I might be at the moment. I've caught it, I think, kind of early in an overreaching, and I could maybe get a super compensation, is total overtraining and chronic fatigue. And that's where I have found myself in the past, thinking, oh, I'll just do a little bit, I'll head out for this bunch ride, and just digging deeper and deeper and never stopping.
So I have two things to say there. So the first thing is I always hear this worry about losing fitness, and I think everyone overestimates how quickly that they can lose fitness. And like, I guess fortunately for this situation, I went through a period where I absolutely couldn't think about training. I still liked racing, so I was still doing the local race series, but I absolutely could not even think about going out to do a ride. But during that time, I was still racing, and that's when I realized, I was like, man, like, it takes a long time to lose fitness. You know, races are hard, so I was doing those every once in a while, and biking to work, and that's pretty much it. And I was like, wow, I could just keep this going for a long time. And you can for like a couple years, but then eventually, like, you get too deep into it and you've suddenly lost a lot of fitness, you know, because you can maintain for a really, really, really long time. And then it starts to disappear pretty quickly, which I actually found that out as well. Because then it takes a long time to get it back. But, you know, 2 years of maintaining a pretty good fitness without doing pretty much anything, that can give you a lot of confidence to have a 2 week break when you need it. Of course, you're not going to continue an upward trajectory. And as I found, you find yourself much lower than where you ever have been before.
No, I know that now. Sorry, I won't. Yeah. Keep going.
I usually see a warning sign before the bad warning signs.
The one I just described?
Yeah. So, see it all the time. And the Superman feeling is the time when training's going perfect. Like, you're hitting your numbers, you're hitting your hours, you're feeling amazing, and it makes you really, really confident. So I haven't found any like really good data to back up what's actually happening with your mind and your body at the same time, but I have seen it enough to know that the Superman feeling doesn't last forever. But what we do know, and what we have seen, is that when you get into this Superman feeling, if you keep going the way that you're going, things are going to go badly. So you can maintain the Superman feeling for probably like 3 weeks or something like that, maybe less, maybe more, who knows. But eventually, if you keep it up and don't have a break, that Superman feeling is going to become overtraining. And we know like we see this when we're training for a big event, where like you're super motivated for this big event, and maybe you're 3 weeks or a month out, everything's going great, but training load is continuing to increase, intensity, you're probably going harder than ever before, maybe maintaining some volume. And we know that like we can't keep that up forever, because what we're actually trying to do at that time is to overtrain ourselves in a controlled manner and then pull back, because then we're going to taper into our big event. And we always see that Superman feeling leading into these big events. To have the Superman feeling is a Superman feeling maybe not related to where we're our trajectory in training. But I always then look back at the details, and that's when we probably need to start making a change.
Yeah. Yeah, you're totally right. Like, that was, it's the hardest, like, it's the biggest trap, because you go, oh, like I did, everything is going so well. You know, I was feeling great, improving, cool, that 2 week big block of training and a recovery week is like set me right up. And I've said, for sure, I look over that when, and you know, you're in a base phase or something, and these athletes start putting out like PBs. You're like, ooh, actually, like, we shouldn't be, but it's the hardest time to say, all right, like, proactively, we're going to have a recovery week. Like, what do you mean? I just did a PB and my biggest week of training. Why on earth would I have a recovery week now, or rest week, or, you know, whatever you want to call it? Like, let's push on. And so that was what I did. and, but now, like, I have these thoughts and I want to describe them to everyone so that you're not alone. Like, we know this is super common, but what I do know when I have these thoughts is that they're unfounded. I know 100% I will, you know, feel better. I will most probably lose the excess weight that I gained. I'll stop craving such bad junk food. My sleep patterns will, you know, fall back in line. I won't be, well, depends what James is up to, but he's a bit older now. We're getting a better sleep schedule. And overall, like, you just, after a week, 10 days, like you said, Matt, pretty much 2 weeks back into training, you forget you actually had 2 weeks off because you feel so good. You're like, oh, I'm exactly back where I wanted to be.
And that's when you can continue your trajectory up, right? Because otherwise, you're just going to continue this downward.
Well, Matt, that is if I am prudent enough to reduce my training load. Okay, so one of the hardest things I think it is for an athlete to admit to themselves, and for me, especially being in the public eye of someone who should know what they're doing, is to admit, like, and when you look on Strava and you see what other people are doing, to go, I can't do that. Like, if I want to continue to improve, I need to do less. Like, it just, it's a hard thing to wrap your head around. But I know, like, clearly I've tried it. I've tried to do more. Yes, it worked for a little bit, but in the long term, it just, I suffered completely. So I need to really pull back and see what I can do for 4 weeks consistently without huge bouts of fatigue. And no real specific emphasis on fixating on like a quantity of training and a conservative training load. And because I do this all the time with athletes, say, look, let's just try it for 4 weeks to see actually if this is too much, because it's the chronic training load that can, you know, lead to the overall fatigue, as opposed to like the acute, like, oh yeah, well, I've only got 2 hard sessions this week.
I'm wondering, do you think the stresses of the coronavirus have anything to do with it? Because this is probably something that everyone's feeling now. Do you think that has anything to do with how you're feeling?
I think, like, more so is an increased workload, which is good. But having, you know, an increased popularity in the podcast and our social media presence, having to keep that up with so many people online has increased the workload. And so that's just a stress. Obviously having a new son, like, and just juggling when you're able to work and train with, like, the loss of flexibility, I guess. With an increased training load, like, it's never the straw that broke the camel's, it's every single bale of hay or straw that makes up the bale of hay. So Like it just all contributes, and it was just it's important to consider those outside stresses when, like, even though I kind of really considered lockdown being the perfect time with less distractions, overall the adding an additional training stress to the already stressful training I was doing didn't help. I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, I've been wondering about this actually, because obviously it's something that affects everyone. And everyone that I talk to, they're either not affected or they have this a feeling that they're not bothered. But the people that are bothered, it's like this new thing that suddenly becomes this big focal point that this is where this stress is coming from, right? This the coronavirus is the stressor. And that which is the totally understandable, right? But then if I'm talking with an athlete and then I look at what they've been up to with their training, you can kind of see trends where, maybe it's not just the stresses of this, like everything else that's going on. Like it could also be like your training too. Like we need to keep training appropriately, especially given this other stress. So one athlete in particular, like because of everything that's happened with races disappearing, training kind of became this kind of gray zone where it was just like, okay, I'm not gonna do a program for a little bit. I'm just gonna go ride and have fun. I was like, well, okay, that's totally fine. Like that's really good for your mental health. Just go have fun for a while, but you still need to have a rest week probably in about 2 weeks. So this is like 3 or 4 weeks ago now, and I talked to this athlete again and saying how the stresses of the virus are so bad. Like, well, did you have that rest week that we talked about? Because you still really need that because you can't overlook appropriate training. And I think some people are just overlooking appropriate training, and thinking that the stress is coming from something that they can't control.
Yeah, while you're saying that, we were, I reminds me when we were talking the other day, and we have our athletes, some of them are training so well. Like they're just ticking boxes, hitting every session. And I'm like, this is amazing. But now just thinking about it, we generally have something that gets in the way, right? That causes, like I say to every athlete when I write a plan, like, look, this isn't going to be 100%. This is best case scenario. With essentially zero distractions for a lot of athletes at the moment, they go, what do I have to train for today? I've got nothing else to distract me. And they're doing every single session, like I was, without fail. And then for the day, I've got no excuse not to do it. The only excuse I have is being soft, or not, not motivated enough, or being like a poor athlete. So I'm going to do it. Like this is what all I've got on for today. I've got my work and everything, but I don't have to travel anywhere. I've got no excuses. I've got no meetings or dinners or anything. So I do it. And so we've got all these athletes just ticking these boxes, hitting these sessions. And in the end, potentially, like we always incorporated like a recovery or rest day, non-training day without actually planning it. And so these training, chronic training loads are increasing. And you have the potential stress that people might not be considering of the global pandemic. I guess, or through, so we go through my story, like it's, people can relate, I'm sure. That's why I wanted to present it. And when we have training, the best way to increase fitness is through rest and recovery. Like training is only one part of the equation. Rest and recovery is the other huge important part. And when we talk about like me having to have a week, 2 weeks off, whatever it's going to be, maybe it's a month. I hope not. I don't think it will be. But, and Matt saying he had 2 years of like no training. I actually just was on the phone yesterday and a guy asked me, what call it, like, how is fitness like associated with all these different athletes? Like, why can't I do what he's doing after he's been training for 2 years? And essentially, like if you have your muscle fiber that contracts to, you know, propel you forward, right? Push the pedal down, run, whatever it is. We've talked about this in the zone two, just last episode. The more efficient that fiber is, the more power force you can produce to, you know, push yourself through space faster, run, ride, whatever it is, faster. The way you get that more efficiently is through training, and also there'll be some genetic component. So if you're genetically gifted, you're going to be pretty good. If you put training on top of that, you're going to be really good. If you chronically train, like Matt did for essentially your entire life, Matt, you just rode your bike, and then you had 2 years off, there's no way that that muscle fiber just immediately becomes inefficient. Like, as you just trained, and then when you get back into it, it's actually not going to take you that long to get back up. You're just reactivating or having to retrain and readapt some muscles that have become unadapted, but a lot of that muscle mass in your body is adapted to be extremely aerobically efficient. So if we look at the science behind just having 2 weeks off, it is outrageous to think that you would lose any fitness, really. Maybe a specific top end, like, but otherwise you wouldn't see a powerlifter have 2 weeks off and then not be able to, like...
This is why, like, prior history of training is super important, and you need to actually consider a lot of things. Like, you know, this person has been doing it their whole life, and it's not just, like, how they look with their muscles, right? And that's what most people are thinking about, is like kind of the look of the muscle. It's all the things inside the muscle fibers that are what make them faster, and how they transport oxygen and their cardiac output, which, like, you're not going to be able to measure. Because being fast is about taking up and utilizing oxygen. And you can't tell that by looking at someone. So someone could be better than you, and just because of what they did when they're a kid.
That's exactly right. And just because someone is the same age as you, and this happens, you know, a majority of the people we work with are late in life athletes, 40 years plus. And so they just point at the other 44-year-old, 46-year-old, and go, he's or she's so much faster than me. Well, it's like, you know, they used to be a pro. You know, they had 2 years off. And the other thing, Matt, you must be able to relate to this, is when someone says, yeah, I've only been training 2 years. You're like, well, what'd you do before that? Like, were you just, didn't, like, nothing? Oh, nah, I was still riding my bike every day to work 30Ks, but I only started training.
Yeah.
I only started competing 2 years ago. And then you also find out, like, they did local races, and they, you know, this is like this huge volume of training, but actually structured training, following a plan and competing in a race outside of the region, what they consider to be, you know, an athlete in training. Oh, I've only done that for 2 years. You're like, oh, well, I'm pointing at you because I've rolled off the couch and I'm 44 years old and I'm wondering why my coach isn't getting me as good as you.
Yeah, and this is exactly kind of what's happening when I talk about how I didn't train for 2 years. Like, I was still pretty much riding. Well, I was riding every day, right? But, like, I wasn't out doing intervals or anything like that. And this is where, like, when someone talks about themselves and what they're doing, it's all kind of on a scale of what they've done before, or and also what they want you to know. You know?
Yeah.
And we see a lot of athletes that come into something like cycling or running that were really good athletes at something else before, and they transition really, really easily. So maybe they did come off the couch for a couple of years, and then they come into one of our sports and they're suddenly amazing really quickly. And you don't get that without the plumbing and the cardiac output and the cells inside your muscle having been developed for many years before.
That's right, and that's where, also, in having an appropriate training load, avoiding overtraining, maintaining consistency, within your training, the zone two and below, and making sure you are training easy. Train easy, right? Get fast, man.
Yeah. Watch out for the t-shirt.
allows that chronic adaptation. And it's just like, you see these mean sessions that people post up on the gram, on social media, like, this is my marathon prep session. You're like, oh, damn. Oh, yeah. And the 5 years of aerobic base training I did. allows it. And so, yeah, like, I have no qualms to think that if I had reduced my training load to 2 rides a week and only 100 kilometers a week rather than 140, and did that for 5 weeks, I would be in a far better position, especially leading into like what will be most probably the summer of racing in a few months, than I am now, where I've gone hard early, had a massive break of like detraining, and then having to rebuild into it. So that whole process has taken so much longer and so much fluctuation in it than if I'd, you know, just done a little less.
Yeah, but the good news is, like, you caught it and you're able to stop training and then get back to consistency, right?
That's right.
The only other option is to not be able to race in the summer, right? You could keep going, but then you won't be able to race in the summer. And this is where it's about finding that fine line, because if we want to get better, we need to push the boundaries a little bit. But yes, we also need to remember that consistency is going to be our greatest, is going to give us the greatest reward. So you got to be able to do a little bit of both. Like, you need to be consistent, but you also need to push the boundaries a little bit.
And be the hardest part, I think, about this, Matt, is being honest that I can't handle this level of training.
Yeah, but this is an arbitrary level that you've picked out.
I know. Order. I know this.
Do you?
I know.
So.
Yes, Matt. I do. So I do know this.
What are you gonna do then? So, you are gonna have a rest, and then eventually you're gonna get back into it, because it's not like you've lost motivation. It's not like you don't have goals anymore. You know that you want to continue improving and that you just kind of did a little bit too much for a short period of time.
Yeah.
So you need your own plan in place for moving forward. Like, how are you approaching that?
What I'm doing is, what I've done, is to look back through my training diary over the last year and pulling out, like, what is, critically looking at it, what is an average training load for me over like a 2 month period. What we often look at is the big weeks. Oh, see, I did this, but like I said, Matt, a lot of stuff gets in the way. We have these random races, we have these club things, we have travel, we have family, we have work. And although you may remember something like, oh yeah, I was nailing training, I need to look back and go, oh, okay. So actually, for a 5 week period, I've never done more than, on average, this amount of training. And I'm going to apply that to these next couple of weeks to see how it pans out. That's what I'm doing, because that's what I've done in the past. I've found that really effective with athletes, to go back, because although there's been a training plan in place, like you and I may have written one, they may have got one online somewhere, actually how effectively they've completed it is very different to what was on the paper. And so they may say, yeah, I do, you know, my plan's 50 Ks a week. I do 50 Ks a week, 5 hours, 6 hours a week. And you go look back, you go, oh, well, on average, actually, I only did 4 hours. So, what do you have? You have any thoughts or opinions on that?
Yeah, I think you kind of have to take that approach. For sure, like, you're always gonna, actually, some riders were talking about it the other day, where, you know, where had heard through the grapevine about someone else's training, and it was like this massive amount of training. And it's like started with one number and then went, yeah, it was like that much. It was this much. Like, oh, that's actually a difference. So then you start to think like, okay, well, how much was it actually, and how long did they maintain this? So it's not until you like see it, like if you're actually looking at it, where you know what was actually being done. So, you know, we can't listen to what we think someone else's training is and try and tailor ours around that. We need to look at what we can actually do and focus on our trajectory. It's a problem with social media as well. Like, people start looking at all these insane sessions, getting this massive FOMO about these sessions that they're not doing.
Yeah, but it's also, you have really the understanding that more training does equate to a greater increase in fitness. Now, there's the other side of that, which, unless you're in Normatec boots, no one puts on Instagram. Okay, unless you're in an ice bath, there's the recovery. And so, yes, if you can train 20 hours a week and you're used to training 10, that will make you a better athlete. If you can also increase your recovery rate by twice that. So we kind of, like, we know that more is going to make us a better athlete, but there's more training comes more recovery. And then you get more adaptation. But often what we only have one side of that equation, more training, more stress. And then we actually, in a ratio, have less recovery. So like we're really digging the whole fast.
I think also, though, the balance of more training, also intensity needs to be looked at within that too. Because if you just do more hours in the same kind of intensity, suddenly you're doing 3 Zwift races a week and 20 hours of running. And that's tough. That's a lot different than doing 20 hours of running easy. So the intensity and more training is part of the more training part or less training part.
Oh, yeah. And even with a lot of plans we've been working with these last few weeks, the noticeable effect intensity has on a volume-based training plan. I understand the demands of hard training, but really it's so much more, adds so much more chronic fatigue when you don't allow the recovery. It's the art and science of it. Like, because on paper, the demands of a session that is, you know, zone, like we talked about, Matt, maybe like a zone 3, zone 4, that's maybe takes 20 minutes and you're, you know, across a 1 hour session, that's not that bad. Overall, it looks like that session's just pretty standard in terms of aerobic zone 2. But then when you follow it up the next day and the next day and the next day, as you're doing like a base phase training plan, that small acute session becomes chronically quite a big stress in the overall plan. And it's important to understand that.
Yeah.
And be reminded of it.
I made some of these like super duper hard, high intensity workouts because a lot of people just couldn't leave their homes. So I made this one kind of model off some things that we normally do, but I reduced the amount of rest. And I was like, okay, well, we can get this done really, really quickly. It's going to be really hard. And then we'll just watch the rest of the training. And I tried it and it was really hard. And I was using it with athletes and some athletes responded a lot differently. Even though it was only a 30-minute workout, I could see how through the rest of the week, it was affecting things, and I had to make changes on the fly, because it reminded me again how important this intensity thing was, and that we need to be careful if we do too much intensity.
Yeah, and also the work to rest ratios, which can can completely alter the demand of the session. Like, sure, 1 minute intervals are 1 minute intervals, but if you have 5 minutes rest versus 30 seconds rest, that's a completely different demand and session, and they both might be 30 minutes. And anyway, we're kind of getting into a different topic now, Matt. I think for the most part, what are our summary? What's our summary of my story, overtraining, and the warning signs and response if you think you're getting into that?
Well, my first warning would be watch out for the Superman feeling. And so this is where notes get really important. So make notes in your training diary. And when you start feeling really good, you need to tell yourself when you're feeling really good. When you start feeling really bad, you need to tell yourself when you start feeling really bad. And then you need to either be able to look at it objectively with your feelings removed as your self-coach, or you need to be able to talk with a coach and to understand it a little bit better. So this is where the outside perspective is always going to be a really big benefit. So you can ask me, Will, and you can also ask Emma, but whether you listen to us, I mean, that's a totally different story.
That
but
is.
Those that'd be my suggestion is watch out for the Superman feeling and what comes after it.
I've written mine down, so I'll just read through them. And in isolation, none of them like kind of indicate things, which is why having a training diary and how I was able to pick it up is just so beneficial. So you have, I had tiredness, craving sugar, heavy legs, lack of motivation, suppressed heart rate, weight gain, fixating on quantity over quality, people commenting I looked tired or sounded flat. Now, when I read those out, Matt, you're like, that screams overtraining. But each one of them was like in a very different time on a very different day. But then when I wrote them all down, and what we didn't really touch on was the suppressed heart rate. And that's just, I was running along at an aerobic pace and I was like, wow, my heart rate's really low. And that feeds into also the Superman feeling where you go, well, now I'm running even faster or putting out even more power at such a, but so I have notes, and then those things started to come together, which then lead to, so keep notes and be honest with yourself. Those are some of the things that caused me to lead to this podcast.
Yeah. That you're right about being honest with yourself, because if you're not honest with yourself, you're not going to be able to be honest with your coach. And time again, the best, the athletes that respond the best are the ones that are honest with themselves first and then honest with me second. And when they feel bad, they let me know. Like, sometimes it's like, feels like beating a dead horse, you know, for them to say when they feel bad or when they feel good. But actually, that's really good information to use.
And we do not, as a coach, think you are a soft athlete if you say you can't handle a training load that we've put in place.
No, that's the best thing that an athlete can do is say when something's too tough.
Yeah, because otherwise we're going to miss the signs, you're going to miss the signs, and then we're going to in place the training, you know, the week after at a similar intensity or overall load. I've had that feedback before, like, oh, I didn't want you to think I couldn't handle it. It's like, well,
it's good to know.
Yeah, you can't. But I don't think any less of you as an athlete or a person because of it. It's an important piece of the puzzle that we're trying to work together to design.
Like, it's literally what we do, right? Is to like find that fine line of what you can and cannot handle.
Yeah, it's the journey. Like, this is part of my journey. Now I know, okay, I'm going to pull it back, and the puzzle, which I see it, this piece of art, which is my training, is starting to, it's getting more information, it's coming together better, so that for a period of time, I'm going to be able to put together a perfect plan until some other stress or I adapt to something else comes into it. So then, Matt, the response. People are listening to this and they're going, yup, like, yeah, this is me in a nutshell, what can we do?
So if someone's feeling this, what can they do next?
Yeah.
Take a break. That is it. Take a break.
How long?
Start with a week. Absolutely. Like, a week is nothing. Like, there's 52 of them in a year. Take a week off. Absolutely. Especially now, you know, maybe when your events have been pushed back. Like, you don't want to be tired and peaking in 2 months when there maybe is no event. Right? So have a break.
Yeah.
Yeah, just do it. What's the worst that could happen?
Nothing.
Nothing bad is going to happen. There's actually nothing bad that's going to happen. You'll come out recharged. So that would be, start with a week, maybe 2 weeks. It'd be fine.
Yeah. So when you come back into training, do your week or something where it's a bit longer than you think. Like if you initially thought 3 days, do five. And then do a session. You want to be, for me, I'm not sure how this will relate to other people, but I want to have that feeling of like, I really, really want to go train. Like there is 0% negativity or lack of motivation or fatigue circulating in myself. I'm just like so eager to go that then I go and restrict myself even like, pretty much never run shorter than an hour. So I'm going to go 30 minutes. I'm going to do like 5 kilometers and hold back and then assess how I'm feeling. And then, yeah, you'll know. Like, again, you've got to be honest with yourself. And that's how you kind of start to incorporate yourself back into training. And accelerate slowly. Don't go, like, I'm not going to jump back into 140Ks a week. You know, I'm going to be very prudent about it.
And I think watch the Zwift racing. Watch the Zwift racing. That is my best recommendation for you. Specifically, Will, is be careful because blowing yourself up on those that takes a lot out of you.
Yes. It does. All right, Matt, I think that'll do us for this week. I hope everyone out there is doing well and training effectively. If you need some help, Matt and I have slots available for our one-on-one coaching, mtbphd.com, pacoaching.tv. Otherwise, if you're more of a DIY athlete, jump on Smart MTB Training, Endurance Training Hub, and you can piece all of this together. We've got great learning resources and everything available for you. And as always, share the podcast, share the love, let your friends know. Check out the merch page if you're following us on social media. Until next time, Matthew, have a good week.